Hello, and welcome to this, the first Capgemini podcast about training. There's five of us on the call today. We all work in within the BTC practice, the Business Transformation Consulting practice. We're five senior training practitioners, and we thought it'd be useful to introduce ourselves first of all, and then we'll talk a little bit more about what we hope to achieve with the podcast as we move forward. So my name is Clive Barber. I've been in training in one form or another for over 20 years. I'm currently working within the public sector, designing and delivering training for a GDPR implementation. Paul, do you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Paul Duggins. I've been at Capgemini now for best part of 6 years or so, but I've been a training practitioner for many, many more years than that, far too many for me to remember, actually. I'm currently working with a sort of a rather large but well-known player in the recruitment market. And it's quite interesting because we are showcasing some new learning technology, which we'll maybe talk about on this podcast or perhaps later on.
Thanks, Paul. Mandy, do you want to go next?
Yes. Hello. My name's Mandy Lenheim. I've been a training practitioner for, this is my 19th year at Capgemini. And currently I'm working on two projects. One of them is a project involving a production line in a factory, namely an ice cream factory. And another one, the other project I'm working on, is in utilities.
Thank you very much. Ollie?
Hi, I'm Ollie Button. I have been working in the training field for getting on for 15 years now, four or five of which have been with Capgemini. Currently, I'm working for a large transport client, and we're implementing a security patrolling tracking software package, and we're particularly tasked with doing the training around that. So we're doing some online learning and coaching and mobile training and things like that.
Thanks, Ollie. And finally, Mark.
Thanks, Clive. So yes, my name is Mark Holden. I started working in the training area circa 2001-2002. The project that I'm working on at the moment is the one with Mandy, where we're going to be involved in assisting an ice cream manufacturer. But I've recently been working on another project for around about 15 months or so with a very large industrial organisation with some very complex technology that they've been working with to create something that keeps us all safe at night.
I think what's quite interesting is we've all been involved in training for a very long time. And it kind of makes me wonder what I like about it, but it'd be interesting to hear how you guys actually got into training and why you're still doing it. What do you like most about it?
I think for me, thinking back, and it still rings true, is that originally I was in more of a technology-based role, but I just enjoyed helping people and sort of giving support to people. And it became apparent to me that when I was helping fix people's technical issues, I was spending more and more time sort of talking about how they could use systems in a better way. That progressed, and then eventually I thought, and I talked to various people that I work with and so on, and it was suggested to me, why don't I branch off in and just go into training? And sort of I've been in there ever since, really. For me, it was that side of it.
Excellent. I think I'm a little bit shallower than you, because I was working at a company that supplied financial research information to market analysts and traders. And it was just all the cool kids worked in the training department. So that's where I wanted to go. Mandy?
I fell into it purely by accident. I'd spent 16 years working at BT and took a redundancy package from BT and got a job within 4 days at Capgemini in training. Had no idea what consulting was about or training, and literally fell into it, and very fortunately, and 19 years later, I'm still here. But I think what I enjoy about it is the fact that all throughout all my career, I've always worked with people. And I think if you were to ask me what my why was, it would be people. So that covers sort of training and helping them.
Great. Thanks a lot. Ollie?
Similar to both Paul and Mandy, I think, really. So I didn't choose to be a trainer. I didn't dream of it as a kid. I just ended up being good at using the software package I was using in my job at the time. Internal training job came up, so I thought I'd go for it. And that was, about 15 years ago. So never looked back, I guess. But yeah, I enjoy the people side of it as well. So I think you need a decent understanding of technology and processes and all that kind of technical stuff. But really, it's about helping people to do their jobs and, assisting people through that change.
So would you say you were primarily a technician or a trainer?
A trainer, really. So it's about it's almost like translation. I think it's you take the technical and you package it up in a way that is digestible for people that don't necessarily have that background. So it's you're the kind of intermediary quite often, I find, but you do need to have a good grounding in both sides.
Well, I guess certainly for the work we tend to do, obviously Capgemini is a very large company, and you never quite know what you're going to be doing from one project to the next. So, you know, for example, we do a lot of ERP work with the likes of Oracle and SAP, but then you can be doing something completely at a tangent, like GDPR, for example, which is what I'm working on now.
Yeah, definitely. No two projects are the same, are they? So you can find yourself getting a bit pigeonholed as a specialist in a particular software area, for example, but something different will always come up, and you always need to be ready to learn something new.
Indeed. So, Mark, what was your first training gig?
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a policeman, but that never quite worked out. So the only person or the only people who would give me a job when I left university was Hoskins, as was, which is, of course, now Capgemini. So originally I was working on a service desk. I then started supporting one of the particular systems, and an opportunity arose to start training in that area. And it was just something that I thought, yeah, I quite fancy the sound of that. I'll give it a try. Standing up in front of people and so on, which obviously was how it was back in sort of 2001, 2002. And it went pretty well. So not long after that, I think it was when I first met Mandy, I joined the team. And then since then, yeah, it's been a job that I've always enjoyed doing. And I think it's for two reasons that have already been mentioned, really. One, obviously, is the people side of things. I think it's what drives all of us. It's being involved with different people on different projects. And then the second element of that is very much that where we work, we're given opportunities to work in very different areas on very different projects. So it gives it that sort of interest and dynamism that maybe some day-to-day jobs just don't do, really. So sort of mixing the two elements, I think, is what keeps me going and keeps me interested.
Yeah, so what about you other guys? What are the things in training that keep you interested in it? So, Mandy, you said you've been at Capgemini for 19 years. What's the thing, or what are the things that keep you working within the training arena?
I think for me, it's every project is like starting a new job. That's how I felt. Although Ollie mentioned about, you know, particular areas of specialism. When I first joined Capgemini, I seemed to be the person that used to work on all the council projects. And then I sort of jumped to other areas. But it was starting a new job and just meeting different people and working in different places. I think that's that the variety kept me around, really.
Was that the same for you, Paul?
Yeah, essentially. I think one of the things that I was particularly attracted by when the opportunity came to join Capgemini was the fact that I'd spent the previous sort of 8 years or so just purely and simply working from in a training consulting type role, but for a smaller niche consultancy practice that just specialized in one ERP platform, i.e. SAP. So, you know, for all the best will in the world, it was difficult to have a holistic view of what was going on in, you know, around training across different technologies, the different approaches and so on. So, you know, when I got talking and the opportunity came to join Capgemini, the fact that we're platform agnostic particularly appealed to me. Obviously, that means from time to time you go on an account and you're dealing with a new software package that you're not familiar with. So there's always going to be challenges and you have to stretch yourself. But overall, it's not about the platform, is it? As we all know, it's about, you know, it's about training, it's about learning, it's about the people. And you know, 6 years in, essentially, I'm still as happy to be here as I was on day one, you know. So we still have the same challenges and I like the variation of it.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, I think the thing I still enjoy most is actually doing the training delivery. But you can't do the delivery until you've done the design and the development work. And I think one of the things that I enjoy most is kind of seeing people's reaction, you know, seeing people learn something new through doing proper, engaging training that people actually get something out of. And I think it's still, for me, I think a lot of corporate training is still pretty bad quality. But I think, obviously, the approach and the methodologies that we bring to a training program actually make a significant difference to the success of most sort of the big projects that we get involved in.
Yeah, I agree. Something else that occurs to me, and this might be something that's specific to working at a consultancy firm like Capgemini is the fact that, you know, obviously we work with alongside a lot of different colleagues on different accounts. But I often think that it's only really us in the training and learning space that has that overall big picture view of a particular program. And bearing in mind, you know, some of the platforms, the size and scale of what's been implemented for our clients, that gives us a pretty big view of that organization and of the program as a whole. So in many cases, I always think it's only the project management team on a particular program and us as trainers. Everybody else is sort of has their head down and is quite siloed in a particular piece of technology or a particular function. Now, if I think about testing, you know, that's all they do, and they just think about testing the system. And similar with the technical people, whereas I quite like our role because we get to see the program as a whole, and generally, hopefully, we're there when things happen and things are deployed, and we actually see the difference these things make to people.
Excellent point.
So I think a lot of times people are very sort of process driven. You know, they've got their stage of the process to do. They do the testing, they do the functional design, all that kind of stuff. They don't necessarily see it through to the end. So it's us that actually it equips people to actually use the system, because that's sometimes it's sort of a bit of a poor relation in terms of, you know, it's just training at the end. It's not seen as a major part of the project sometimes, but it's so vital to any system that people actually use it correctly to make it work.
Point. So what are some of the key mistakes that people make in the large training programs that we tend to work on?
I think quite often you'll find people develop training that's extremely system-based or process-based and doesn't really take into account the wider context or the business processes around it. So sometimes things might work in a vacuum, but then when you put them into the real world, they don't necessarily take flight in the same way. So I think it's pretty critical for people to be able to understand them properly, to be able to relate them to their real experience, but also to actually fully test them and make sure that that things do work in a real world scenario as well.
One thing I see regularly is that within the plans that they're expecting the subject matter experts that are working on the project to actually deliver the training. And that's a real red flag to me, because you know full well that just before go live, those people are going to be incredibly busy solving other problems. They're certainly not going to have time to deliver training. And also when people talk about training delivery, they're going to use PowerPoint. It always scares the living daylights out of me, because you know PowerPoint isn't really a training tool. It's a useful tool, but it certainly shouldn't be the be all and end all in any training program.
No, and it does kind of undermine the professionalism of training as well, to a certain extent. If you just sort of think this person isn't a trainer, but they can just do it, there is a skill to it and an art to it, and you know, experience is vital. So just assuming that someone who has the knowledge can do that job is a pretty dangerous assumption, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's an interesting point, and it's prompted much discussion. And I sort of have quite a strong opinion on that, because the amount of times that I've heard it be said by somebody technical or been speaking to somebody who's technical, and because they've perhaps fallen on a little bit of hard times and can't find anything, a role, I'm not talking necessarily here about people within our organisation, within Capgemini, I'm thinking of more around the freelance end of the market, but what attitude, certainly in the SAP world, always tended to be, well, if you can't find any work configuring the system, you can always just, quote, do a bit of training. I always thought that was unfair, and I always push back on that, because as we've already heard, training is a, you know, it's a specialist skill. It takes a certain type of person to deliver good quality training and make sure that people are learning what they need to learn. It's not something that anybody can just drop into and do. So I often feel that our profession, if you like, is devalued in the eyes of many, and it's a constant battle that I've had, I feel that I've had to varying degrees throughout my career.
I think so as well. I think training is put to the end, and people do not really understand the amount of effort that goes into getting people to actually sit down and do the training and actually learn. I've always found that quite astonishing that they say, as you said, Paul, that you can do a bit of training. But it's not just a bit of training, is it really? There's a lot of effort that goes into it. And I don't think that value is appreciated all the time.
The reality is anybody can deliver training, but it takes a professional trainer to deliver effective training.
Yeah, so if you see technical people delivering training, sometimes you will find them getting very frustrated that people aren't taking on board what they're trying to put across. They don't kind of go with their class. They kind of deliver it's more like a presentation style. They'll deliver and they'll expect people to take it in, but there won't really be any kind of engagement or checking of people's understanding, that kind of thing. They just kind of deliver it, and then if people haven't got it, then that's their fault.
Stand there and talk at them.
What sort of things should people be doing to make their large-scale training programs successful?
Well, I think one of the key things is, again, going back to our ideas of the SMEs, is they have to be involved, because I always think of us as being magpies, basically. We go around, we're not the experts, we basically steal all the good information that other people have got, and it's absolutely vital that the SMEs and senior management as well at the various clients are invested to give us the time, because if we don't have the time, then it will literally end up being click, 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 with absolutely no context. And having that context and that business knowledge around it are the things that I think differentiates what we do from some of the areas where maybe they don't do it quite as well. So I think as long as we can get the business on side, get them involved, give us that information, then we can go and take that into something that, you know, really delivers on what they need.
I think we've got some dependencies around things like assumptions, because I think many organisations make some massive assumptions around their own workforce. Assume, for example, that everybody is fully au fait with all of the technologies out there. And we know in the real world that's very often not the case. It's around the impacts as well. So how many organisations do we work with where they just totally underestimate the impact of changing people's software systems or whatever it is that we're helping them implement? Because, you know, how many times do we hear, well, they're doing the same thing but in a different system, it's fine, it's no problem. But actually, when you do that, perhaps if you're not that comfortable with technology, if you're not that IT literate, that activity is 80% of your daily duties. That's a massive impact, you know, and we see that and we know that, because obviously we face off to people when we're delivering whatever type of training or learning that we are. But I always find that many organisations make some massive incorrect assumptions about it and really don't understand the impacts of what they're doing until it's almost too late.
Yeah, good point. So for me, I think the first thing you need to do is to make sure you understand what the business needs are. And then your training should focus on the priorities that the business had. What does the business want to achieve by implementing the new software or a new process or whatever the training in question is? So that should then be the total focus for the training effort. And also then the actual training that you design and deliver needs to be experiential. I don't really like the word, but people basically need to be doing and practicing something. So they need to be if it's a system, they need to get their hands on the system, a real live system, not a dummy system.
Well, yeah, I did just want to hark back to the training we all went on recently, where we all got together with the TAP training. And one of the big things that came out for all of us, I think, was around the evaluation of training, around understanding before you start how it is that you're going to measure success. And that really helps you to kind of focus on what it is you're trying to achieve and delivering that in an effective way. But also it's sort of helpful for developing your training rather than just churning out exactly the same thing again and again. So you can see what works well and what doesn't work well. And that can either stay with us as the sort of external training professionals, or that knowledge can stay within the organisation as well for use in future implementations as well.
I agree with Ollie. I think, you know, the evaluation is really important. And I think providing them with something that they can take forward for lessons learned for other programs afterwards, should it ever happen, is good.
Well, that also reminds me of another point as well, is in any training program, you need to build in the transfer. So you actually make sure that the knowledge or the skills go from the training room or whatever the training environment is, and then it's retained and taken back to the place of work for them to sort of carry on the best practice once they're back at their desks.
Yeah, and that's why we always encourage the involvement of SMEs and the client as well, because, you know, once we pack up our bags and toolbox and go home, we don't want to take the knowledge with us. We want them to keep it, as you say.
So, yeah, going back to the training needs analysis bit as well, I think one of the key things is understanding what's going to work for the clients in terms of what is the right way of delivering this. Because, again, certain clients still want, you know, the old-fashioned classroom approach, which may be absolutely appropriate, but then again, it might not be. It was something that I was reading recently, was talking about the right method to be able to give people information around birds. So if you're going to go through and then talk somebody through, well, how does a bird look? the best way you can do that is obviously by giving them a visual cue rather than actually describing the bird. And then similarly, if you're going to go through and then ask somebody, you know, what are the particular sort of bird song that a bird has, then you're going to have them listen to it. So whilst obviously we're not teaching people how to sort of recognise birds or bird song, the principle is basically the same in terms of, is it going to be some classroom learning? Is it going to be e-learning? Is it going to be something, obviously in this day and age, it's going to be a lot more driven potentially by a more informal approach. So talking with the clients and the relevant people and understanding what is the appropriate sort of way forward, which is something that obviously we need to decide, but based upon the conversations that we've had, is absolutely key. Because if we have really great training, but it's classroom training and actually the location isn't particularly great and the environment isn't particularly great, then was there a better way of doing that? Because we don't want to be putting those blockers in, because if we can keep it as smooth and as appropriate as possible, then it takes away, you know, those blockers to the individual's learning.
So we've mentioned classroom training, which some would consider old-fashioned. We're also using a lot more technology solutions within the training environment now. What are the technologies and the techniques that are hitting the spot at the moment? What are you getting excited about technology-wise in training?
I like the look of some of the concepts of these digital adoption platforms. So I'm lucky enough at the moment with the client that I'm working with. So they've been quite bold, I think, and they've followed our advice and they've actually implemented one of these platforms. And we're only now starting to see, you know, to start to use it. But even so, we can see already, even though it's very early days, we can see that it has massive amounts of potential. Not as a training tool in its own right, but certainly as a way of complementing other options. So complementing what gets delivered in a classroom setting, in an informal face-to-face or remote session type setting over something like WebEx or something like that. So it's just another tool in our toolkit, if you like, but it's quite interesting to use, and we're now starting to, the technology being there now and us starting to use it is opening up a whole new set of doors and prompting even more questions. And so we're thinking now, right, how are we going to use this? What's the best way to use this? What's the best way that we can use this new tool to present content so that we get maximum bang for the buck, if you like?
So these are the what we're calling adaptive or adoptive learning systems, whereby you can be within an application and the help comes up as you move around a screen. So it'll actually, if you have a task to complete, it will tell you in a live environment, step by step, where you need to click, what information you need to enter, and how you move from one step to the next.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's those are some of the benefits there that you've just talked about, Clive. And I think there's still an element, though, as I say, that we need to understand, because somebody, you know, who understands what good learning potentially is and has their learning hat on still needs to be able to understand how to get the most out of these platforms. But absolutely, the biggest differentiator, I think, with these new platforms over most of the other more traditional training or learning approaches is that it doesn't necessarily take you away from being productive. It doesn't take you away from your day job. It's a way of complementing. So you're actually learning as you're working, albeit perhaps at a much reduced pace, but you're still being productive as opposed to being taken away into a classroom or, you know, having to stop what you're doing to look at some sort of e-learning of some sort or to dial into a call. Obviously, if you're doing that and you're giving that your full attention, then obviously you can't be working as well. So, it's another tool in the toolkit, and I think it has its place. But we're only now starting to look at it and start to sort of really explore the potential of these things.
I think two of the things that really excite me are both virtual and augmented reality. I still think for most large-scale programs, they probably cost too much to actually implement, but there will come a time, I think, when both those technologies will be a lot of fun to use in a training environment.
Oh, definitely. I was not directly involved. Recently did some work with one of the utility companies, and they were talking there when I was talking to people in their learning team. They were talking there about having systems whereby their engineers that are out on the road when they go out to a particularly complex piece of machinery have some sort of a mobile device, some sort of a tablet, point it at the device that they're there to either service or maintain or fix, and then just walk around it, and then they're seeing a 3D representation of that thing in front of them on their tablet. And as they walk around, the view is following them. And then they can, it's almost as if on the tablet, they're peeling back layers like an onion, and they can see internal components. You know, they can click on it and it will tell them all about the technical specifications. It's referencing data from previous breakdowns, so it's suggesting the most likely causes of problems. Exciting times, I think.
That's good stuff. Anybody else want to add anything to that?
Just referring back to what Paul was saying about the sort of micro-learning type stuff. So rather than having a one-shot all-day classroom session where that's your one chance to learn everything you need to know about one application, for example, if you have these kind of micro-learning interventions, you can get real-time training at the point of need rather than having to cast your mind back to something that you may have done, you know, 6 months ago or a year ago on a training course. You can get it sort of 5 minutes before you need to do it, and it's very, very much capable of being tailored exactly to a very specific task. So that's kind of what we're looking at the moment on the projects I'm doing. So we've got a kind of mobile device enabled application, and we're going to be rolling out little short videos onto the devices themselves so people can get a very quick refresher on how to carry out a specific task just before they do it. I think that's a really, really powerful way of making something relevant and realistic to them for training, rather than the sort of slightly dry, abstract classroom environment.
It's really good to hear all of this because it's in line with this, you know, the new thinking of the modern learner. And we haven't really had many examples of this. And it's really great that we've got two examples with you and Paul on sort of different sorts of projects, particularly around learning on a mobile device. Because people want to sit and learn on the bus, don't they? They want to use that time to get knowledge as opposed to doing it while they're working.
Yeah, it's almost the Google effect, isn't it? Starting to filter through from sort of personal computing, where it's probably been kicking around now for about 10 years or so, to the corporate environment, into the workplace. People now, I guess the question is, you know, do how much knowledge do people need to retain versus how much knowledge can they get exactly at the point of need, like they would do at home when they Googled something? As Ollie was saying, you know, bite-sized chunks entirely at the point of need. Do people need to retain knowledge, or do we just need to give them the ability to get it when they need it?
Yeah, because if you want to understand how to use something you've just purchased, like an iPad or a new phone, what would you do? You can Google and get, or do a YouTube, can't you? Get a YouTube video up on something. So it's like that.
Yeah, social learning is I mean, that's the first thing I think pretty much everybody does these days, is you do an internet search. You Google it, don't you?
Yeah. Exactly.
Somebody inevitably will have put a video on YouTube showing you how to do something. So again, programs like or applications like Slack that we use at work is another way. And we all use that pretty extensively at Capgemini.
I think one thing to bear in mind, though, is that it's critical to choose the right intervention for the right thing. So you have to be very careful about not kind of shoehorning some newfangled learning method into something where it doesn't quite fit. So I'm sure there's a place for everything, but it might be that some things are still best dealt with in a classroom environment in a sort of slightly more old-fashioned way. So it's just about finding the right opportunities for those.
That's getting the balance right, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I can, again, I agree, Ollie. I think it's very easy to fall into the trap of technology for technology's sake. But, you know, we need to think about what is right for the people that are, you know, on the receiving end, and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's just one of a whole host of different options, techniques.
Well, that's the end of our first podcast. I hope you find some of that useful, and we'll be able to incorporate some of the points we made into your training programs going forwards. For the rest of our series of podcasts, we're going to be looking at the various elements of the training life cycle, starting with training strategy, moving on to the TNA, and then we'll do a podcast on each of design, develop, deliver, and evaluate, which we think is very important. We'll also look at how you can factor training into your business as usual, post-go live, plus any other topics that we think you may find useful. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll join us for the next one.